Well, good evening and welcome, welcome to tonight's program, Ann Arbor Elections, What Works and What Doesn't. We want to thank the Ann Arbor District Library for hosting tonight's event, and we want to thank the panelists for sharing their expertise and their experience with us. And of course, we want to thank you, the audience, for coming out on this rather treacherous evening. Let's hope it doesn't get too icy by the time we leave. Tonight is the first of a two-part series on Ann Arbor elections. In this first discussion, we want to take a look at where we are and how well our system is working for us. In part two, which will be on April 14th, same time, same station here, we will take a look at how other municipalities across the country are electing their public officials. Before we begin the panel discussion, I'd like to provide a little context. Prior to the 1993 Ann Arbor City elections were held in the spring of each year. This changed when city elections were moved to November and combined with state and federal elections. Tonight, we will hear about the results of this change. We now have 22 years of experience with that system. What are the pluses and what are the minuses? The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization, and we aren't assessing the elections based on partisan results. Instead, we're concerned with other measures. For example, does every vote count? Do our elections encourage participation and representation for everyone? Do we have strong candidates to choose between in primary and general elections? Is voter turnout solid? Is voting convenient? And are voters well informed? Our local elections compare well with many other communities, but we believe that there is always room for improvement. So tonight, let's begin this discussion with where we are. League member Will Hathaway will serve as tonight's moderator. Will?
Thank you for joining us tonight. I am pleased to introduce the panelists, and I'll then pose some questions that the League has prepared for them. And then after that, there will be a chance for you to ask your questions from the audience. To my left, David Askins. David is a journalist who co-created the Ann Arbor Chronicle, our much-beloved and mourned online news source about local government, which ceased operations last fall after 6 years. Dave and his wife, Mary Morgan, were the reporters for the Chronicle and probably share the record for the most public meetings attended by anyone in Washtenaw County. They recently launched Civ City, an initiative to address citizen apathy. To my right, my immediate right, is Jean Carlberg. Jean is a Democrat whose 12 years representing Ward 3 on City Council from 1994 to 2006 overlapped with her service on the Planning Commission, which she left in 2011. Jean's experience with city elections, though, dates back to her work on behalf of other candidates starting in the 1970s. Known for her advocacy on human services issues, Jean has continued to work on the issue of affordable housing as a board member of the Washtenaw Housing Alliance. And then to my far right, I guess that's sort of just a coincidence.
I did not choose this.
Is Lou Belcher. Lou is a Republican who was mayor of Ann Arbor from 1978 to 1983. After serving two terms on city council, he won the office of mayor in an unusual special election in 1978 that was held to settle the disputed 1977 contest with incumbent mayor Al Wheeler. Lou went on to win three more terms as mayor, and he is known for many things, including his leadership in saving the Michigan Theater. So I'm going to start with a question. So this is sort of an introductory question, just to get sort of warmed up. And Why don't we start with you, Lou, and then we'll work our way down the row. So first of all, why is the topic of Ann Arbor elections important to you?
Well, first of all, of all the famous elections in Ann Arbor, I think I was involved in probably the most famous. I got a call from someone in Seattle 2 years ago that said there's a little napkin in Starbucks that outlines the 1977 mayoral election in Ann Arbor, and to tell everybody who's drinking coffee that day that one vote does count. If you remember the 77 mayoral election between Al and myself, came to a one vote, and suddenly all of the disputed ballots that were absentee became personalities unto themselves, the squiggly line, you know, whatever. And that one vote, I think, brought home to everybody, at least in the city of Ann Arbor, how important the vote is. And I had employees, I owned an engineering company, I had employees coming up to me for the next 2 or 3 weeks saying, I can't, my conscience won't take it, I just didn't vote. It was raining, my bicycle, I got. And when I counted all the letters and telegrams and everything I got, I would have won by 15,000 votes. So it does count. That's, I can tell you, the local elections count, because you can elect somebody to go to the state, you can elect somebody to go to the federal government, and God bless them, that's a hell of a job, but they get lost. But when you're in local elections, there are 11 people that determine whether you have art, tires, potholes, police, fire, whatever. When it meets the road, city council, it has the final responsibility. And if you don't vote, then you complain, then you need to shut up. Simple as that.
Jean?
Well, elections are important to me because it's where we decide who is going to make the decisions for the residents in this city. And as one of the many people who's very interested in the quality of life in this city, it's my opportunity to organize elections as well as to vote and to help get people elected that I think will make the right decisions, that will work cooperatively with the other people who are on council, that will listen to the public, and will help us use all the smarts that are in this city to make really good decisions. It's where we live, it's where our families are, it's where our hearts are, and I want this to be the best city it can possibly be. And the only way I know to do that is to be involved in the electoral process, as well as involved on city boards and commissions. Whatever your interest is, there's a way here to be involved, and that will make us the best city possible.
And Dave?
I don't have as good a story as Lou, for sure, and also not as good as Jean. I guess I come to this topic somewhat grudgingly, both viewed from the point of view of immediate history and also growing up. I turned 18 in 1982, and I did not register to vote until 1988, and that was a conscious and deliberate decision, because I majored in math and statistics as an undergrad, and I was persuaded that the myth of the one-vote election didn't really exist, and that the election turnout, whatever it was probably an adequate random sampling to be sufficient to predict what the true will of the people was. And along about that time, there was also a fairly, I guess, controversial issue regarding selective service registration. I wasn't even sure, actually, that selective service is mandatory anymore. I had to look it up this afternoon. It is, but I don't hear anybody complaining about that. Back in 1982, we young men were complaining about that, and we were resistant to the idea of registering for the Selective Service. And so registering to vote, registering for Selective Service, I was averse to registering for anything. I was not interested in that. But in, you know, 1988, I had just met a lovely young lady, and I was smitten with her. And I got the distinct impression that she valued civic participation a lot more highly than I did, but I got the idea that maybe it would help things along if I registered to vote and participated in that presidential election. So I said, you know, I will do that. And so that's how I came to even be a registered voter. When and that young lady is Mary Morgan. I did, in fact, marry her. We got married. When we founded the Ann Arbor Chronicle, it was actually controversial between the two of us whether we would actually cover elections. Because to me, there's a bright line distinction between campaigns and elections and governance, and I wanted to focus on governance. I did not want to deal with the sordid business of elections and campaigns, but we figured ultimately, and I was also persuaded by this argument, that in order to sell yourself as a publication that is focused on civics and government affairs, if you said, oh, we don't do elections, that would be a very tough sell to make. And so, you know, my interest in elections really stems from the fact that, well, it was my part of my job for 6 years. And, you know, if you do a job for 6 years, and it's part of the subject matter of a job, you become interested in it, you become, you achieve a certain mastery of some of the detail involved in the procedures and the process and the history. So I think my interest, a lot of it, stemmed from the fact that now, as it happens, I know a fair amount about it.
All right, well, for question number two, in 1993, the city elections moved from April to November. The stated purpose was to increase turnout and to decrease the expense. Were these goals achieved? Are there any negative results from this change? You want to start it off, Dave, and we'll work our way back.
I might use up all of the time for this question in my speaking turn, so you'll let me know if I...
All right.
Okay. So I think that, you know, on its face, the financial goal surely must have been achieved. I set out to actually verify that empirically by looking at the last 40 years of elections. But it became quickly apparent to me that just from the records available in the city clerk's office, the paper records go back to 1975, so 40 years. I didn't know enough about everything that might have been on the ballot for the city elections, and I didn't have enough mastery of actually what was happening during that time to be able to say, oh, if there had not been city elections that year, then we would have saved money on the election overall. But I think that, at least theoretically, every primary election that we run in the city of Ann Arbor costs, I think, around $7,000. So, and by a primary election, I mean in a ward. And the way I arrive at that figure is that in 2011, which was an odd year election, the city council, well, actually, it was the city administrator, about this time of year, was putting together the proposed budget, which he had to put before the city council in April. And he had to guess how many wards are going to have contested primaries. So Roger Frazier guessed two wards would have contested primaries. He guessed wrong. So by the time the council actually had the budget in front of it for approval, they had to make a requested amendment from the city administrator to increase the budget by $7,000 to add one more primary because there were three contested primaries that year. So I think if you add up the number of, if you use $7,000 as a rough figure, five wards times seven, that's $35,000, times two elections, that's $70,000, we probably saved $70,000. So I think that objectively measured, we probably achieve that goal. One negative result, I think, from that change is in the greater participation that we see in the November elections. So generally, I think reflexively, we think, greater participation, that's a positive result. If we achieve that, then that is a positive thing. And there's no question that we actually did achieve that goal for even-numbered years, at least. And if we just focus for a second on even-numbered years, even if we accept that in even-numbered years, we increase participation, that's great, the mayoral election is in one of those even-numbered years, which means that the threshold for any voter-initiated referendum gets raised because you need to collect signatures of 20% of the total number of voters who voted in the immediately previous mayoral election. So in contrast to the olden days of the 70s and 80s, when turnout, generally speaking, was around 20,000 voters per year. I mean, in those years that Lou was talking about, it peaked at around 30,000. But generally speaking, around 20,000, that's 4,000 signatures you need to collect for a voter-initiated referendum on a charter or an ordinance. So nowadays, gubernatorial and presidential years vary somewhere between 30,000 and 55,000. So you're looking at 6,000, 7,000 in a gubernatorial year, or 11,000 or so. So there is that somewhat unexpected consequence that it makes it harder to use the tools of direct democracy because we have greater participation in November elections. And I would say that if that greater participation were the consequence of a generally greater and vibrant civic life, then that wouldn't be such a bad thing because it wouldn't be hard to collect signatures from a group of people that are participating in elections just because they are more civically engaged. But I think the fact is we have greater participation simply because we have made voting incredibly convenient. You vote in a city election the same time you vote in a state or in a state election or a presidential election. And so you can participate in the city election sort of without even trying. In fact, if there's a party label, it's easy just to pick your favorite team and feel good about the fact that you participated in the election, even if you have no information about the candidate other than the party label. So that's for the even number of elections. For the odd number of elections, if you look at the participation, we've actually decreased participation, objectively speaking. If you chart it out on a graph, participation in mayoral elections in April was greater than the city council election participation in the even years was greater than what it is in the odd years now. I'll shut up now.
Well, you'll get another chance later. Jean.
As someone who was going door to door in January, February, and March, as you were also, I can attest that April is a terrible time to have an election. People would not even consider running just because of the difficulties of having to do that kind of campaigning. It's very hard to go to someone's door when it's 20 degrees out, knock on the door, they open the door, you bring them a blast of cold air, and you can hardly speak because your lips are frozen to your teeth. It's not a pretty sight, and it's not effective campaigning. You can't really get people to talk with you at the door about what your issues are or about what their interests are. Because we live in Michigan, we have this very narrow frame of good months to hold elections. So I was one of those that was very happy to see the election move out of April into November, where you have the greatest chance of getting the greatest number of voters to pick a candidate for city council. There is drop-off in November from the people at the top of the ticket to the people at the bottom of the ticket, so everybody does not choose to go down and vote for city council members, but they are at least there at the polls and have the opportunity to do that. So I think it's both a savings in money, clearly, not to hold an election in April just for city council, but you also maximize the chance of getting the greatest number of voters to actually indicate who they prefer. It's up to the candidates, of course, to get to people and to convince them they ought to vote for candidate A and B. Having a primary in August is also not ideal because people are on vacation or their brains are on vacation because they're thinking about everything else except politics. So I think that is a time frame to consider whether we have choices about having primary elections sometime other than during the summer, because we get very low turnout then. You get very committed voters, very predictable voters, but you get a minimum of voters during a primary in the summertime. So I'm glad it's changed. I think it's fairest to the voters to ask them to vote for city council folks when they're at the polls, and that gives us the best turnout. So I don't bemoan the loss of those April elections.
Lou, your turn.
Well, I have a somewhat different view. I think the presidential election and the governor's election and the state elections in the even number of years is a detriment sometimes because you don't become a Republican until you're 45. And so when the students vote, they don't know who the local candidates are. Quite frankly, they don't even know, you know, who the vice president of the United States is, let alone who's a city council member, what the issues are, and so forth. I think the November elections are super. I just think we ought to hold them on the odd number of years in a non-presidential election, because there are some other things that we've and I've been here watching the city politics for 50 years. Some of you have been with me for 50 years. But I can tell you that in that whole period, there are some issues that have been very contentious. There have been some that, particularly students voting on millages. And, of course, the argument was that they pay rent. Rent's part of the economic base that taxes go into. Therefore, they pay taxes. But the thing we forgot is that all of the people who live in the University of Michigan housing do not pay any taxes. So you have a kid that's here for 4 years and can actually bond you for the next 30, and you know, which I thought was terribly unfair. But I don't mind the November elections, and I like to see people turn out. I think it's wonderful we get the most people out to vote, but I think that they need to be the kind of people that at least are interested in the candidates, interested in the city, and not just pulling a party lever, which I think right now, and we'll, I'm sure, get to that question pretty soon. I think right now politics have changed so much in my era. When I was involved heavily in politics, and I was the Republican city chairman in 1968, a couple of guys from the football team recruited me. You couldn't find a Democrat hardly. In fact, there was headlines that when I was mayor, right after the I was elected mayor, it said, "Will the Democrat Party ever come back?" Well, now they're digging up Neanderthal tusks from Republicans. the one thing though I can say is that we all want the best representation we can have. I'm sick and tired of political parties, well, all of them, where the members of both parties are loyal to their party and not loyal necessarily in the best interests of the federal, the state, and the local governments. And I think in some cases right now, that's probably my biggest contention in elections right now, is we've become a nation of people who knee-jerk because they belong to the Republican Party or they belong to the Democrat Party. And it's on both sides. It's not one side or the other. And I think that we need to elect people based on their abilities, based on their desires, based on their willingness to commit, and based on their issues, too. And we all disagree. When I was growing up in politics, three of my best friends were Eugene Power, Neil Stabler, and I forgot his name. That's one of one of the compartments that didn't open. But we all got along together, and you could fight, you were friends, and you could talk about issues intelligently. I spent many hours talking with Neil Stabler about various issues. I was fascinated because he was so knowledgeable. And Eugene Power was the same way. He and I were partners in crime and several ventures in the arts. I'll never forgive Eugene for making me president of the Marcel Marceau Mime Center. If you've ever taken care of a pet hamster, and he could talk, if you were alone with him, he'd talk you under the table. And I always thank Gene profusely for that. Anyway, but that's my feelings. Novembers are fine, elections are fine, but let's at least, if we had an election in November, have it the day before the national election or something. Let the people come out who are interested in the city of Ann Arbor and vote.
Well, actually, our next question has to do with partisanship. Ann Arbor, Ionia, and Ypsilanti are the only three Michigan cities that hold partisan municipal elections. What good does that do us, and what harm? Let's see, who wants to start? Jean, you want to start?
Sure. As a very partisan person, I have to state right up front, I believe your party determination says a lot about what you value. And I appreciate being able to find that out initially about someone who wants to run for office. So I am not bothered by partisanship at all. I think if we look at cities around Michigan, I think we can say Ann Arbor is as well run as any of them. I don't think there's any evidence that having partisan election gets you people who can't do a good job. I don't think that's a determinant. We can't say that Grand Rapids, with its nonpartisan elections, is any better run than Ann Arbor. So I don't see that as being critical to good government. I do think that we operate, however, in a partisan world to a large extent. From president on down, every other office, we have to deal with people who say they are Democrats, people who say they are Republicans, and that's the starting point for the discussion about what they value and how they think they will vote. A lot happens once you get elected. You may not be able to act in the way you thought you would when you first ran for office, but at least you have a sense of the basic values of that person to start with. So I think it's a starting point for people. I think having a party organization in a city is valuable. It brings people together to talk about issues. It brings people together to argue about different aspects of issues. There's no entrance fee. There's no examination you have to pass to be a Democrat or a Republican. You just go to the meetings and you meet with people that you think share your values, and you figure out how to organize in order to get good people elected to city council and to every other office above that. So I see partisan as being helpful in terms of organization. I see it being helpful as a starting point for what you believe, and I think it makes it easier for voters who are partisan in every other choice to say, I'll start with this person and I'll figure out if they really represent my views or not. The challenge we have in Ann Arbor for some would be that one brand, the Republican brand, is not very popular in this community, I think particularly because of what is happening at the national level and to some extent what is happening at the state level. Some of the views held by the Republican Party and held very strongly and are a litmus test for belonging makes many people in Ann Arbor feel that's not a party to which they could, with which they could participate for very specific reasons. So it appears that Ann Arbor, when you look at its elections all down the ticket, Ann Arbor votes heavily Democratic. That's true of most large cities where the people, where the majority of the population is, they primarily vote for Democrats. And even when you have partisan elections, they're not, when you have nonpartisan elections, they're not really nonpartisan. People know what their political affiliation is. It's not a surprise to anybody who's running for office. They know who's a Democrat. They know who's not a Democrat. So although the D or the R might not be after your name on the ballot, people in the community know who, what party you associate with, you know what your alliances are, and know who's helping you get elected. So I think nonpartisan is an incorrect description of what actually happens in those elections. It seems to resonate as a good government kind of tag, but there's no guarantee you're going to get any better representatives, any better people to occupy those positions on city council with nonpartisan than you will with partisan. So because I find it very comfortable, I want it to stay partisan. I think it's helpful to us as people in a community to know where to go to get people who feel like you do and to argue it out at that level. And you also have to argue it out in front of voters. You have to go to them and say what you believe and why you believe it and convince them to go to the polls for you.
I think that I agree with a lot of what Jean's just said with respect to the probable role of partisanship in an election that was held on a nonpartisan basis as far as what's on the ballot. And my response to that is yes, and that's why it wouldn't hurt anything to get rid of the D's and the R's on the ballot, because a candidate would still be able to present themselves as a Democrat or a Republican or as somebody who has no party affiliation or as a Green or as a U.S. Taxpayers Party or what have you. So running nonpartisan elections does not preclude the discussion of partisanship as a part of the campaign. So all of the positive attributes that Jean elucidated there, I think, could well be a part of nonpartisan elections. So we don't lose anything of value by eliminating D's and R's from the ballot. It seems to me that, and again, I mean, another point of agreement between Jean and me, when she talked about the value of moving elections from this time of year, for heaven's sakes, to November, she talked about the idea that some people wouldn't run just because of what it took physically to campaign in the cold weather. So it seems to me that we do have some subset of our citizens for whom the partisan election, the D or the R or whatever on the ballot, is a barrier to their willingness to step forward to serve. And it seems to me that if we can remove that barrier in a fairly straightforward, easy way, that it's worth doing. It seems to me that, you know, when I talked about the decrease in participation in the odd number of years, in the 20 years from 1975 through 85, compared to the most recent 20 years, I mean, that's clearly a function of the number of candidates. I mean, if you plot the correlation between number of candidates on offer in city council elections and the participation, I mean, you can see the clear correlation that when there are contested races, people show up to vote in them. So I think that when we notice that fewer and fewer people are willing to step forward to serve in this capacity. And we have people tell us explicitly, this is a barrier to my stepping forward to serve, then it is worth at least giving consideration to removing that barrier. I mean, that's not the only barrier, for heaven's sakes. I mean, but I think that on the list of possible barriers to candidates stepping forward to serve, that's an easy one to implement.
And Lou.
Yes. Well, I feel I've gone through the wars, all of the wars you possibly can go through. And I think the partisanship right now in the United States and in all forms of government, all the way down, you know, is part of our problem. Let me give you an example. I served with a lot of Republicans who never would have run for city council if they had to run as an independent. They just wouldn't do it. And you would have lost a hell of a lot of good talent. I don't think in local elections that there's probably a whole lot of different issues that we are really different. There may be some, but most of them are just good, solid local government issues. You know, if you go in, I don't care if you're a Democrat, Republican, or a Moroccan, if you go in and you tell them, and you mean it, public safety is the number one issue. Our public infrastructure is the number two issue. And then we go down from there. And, you know, Republicans can be human beings, too. I was given a speech at Michigan Theater for a fundraiser last year. And after I got done, a very nice lady, came up to me and said, I didn't know Republicans had a sense of humor. What the hell are you talking about? You have a sense of humor. Where'd that come from? And I, you know, if you labeled me a staunch right-wing Republican, I probably am on some issues, but none that affect really roads, police, and everything else. Because if you look at our city council, I had 8 Republicans at the time I served. You know, it wasn't that they were Republicans, they were citizens. They served their 2 terms on city council and they left. They went back to their businesses or teaching or whatever they did. And it wasn't a political process when I started. It was more or less where you stand on the issues. And our council built more subsidized housing than the Democrats have in the last 10 years. We built 2,000 senior housing. I personally went to Washington and saved the Arrowwood subdivision or Arrowwood Cooperative, 485 apartments that were going to go private. That's more than all have been built. The arts were very important to me. We didn't have millions. We wanted to raise money from everybody we could to fund art. But we wanted a police car there in 2 minutes and a fire truck there in 4 minutes. And that was prime. Then they want their garbage picked up. Heck, we started curbside pickup. What? Republicans started curbside pickup and recycling? My God, how could this possibly happen? I'll tell you what. I think this city is far, far beyond partisanship. I think I watched this city grow, and I can tell you that Republicans and Democrats in this city want the same damn thing. We may have different priorities. Somewhere down they shuffle and they shuffle. But I don't want to see the city government of Ann Arbor become the hopping stone for politicians to go to the state legislature, for politicians to go to higher office. And that's what this office has become. You have a partisanship. You've got people waiting in the wings to take city council seats so they can run for state rep and then state senator and then term limit it out to go somewhere else. The city council of Ann Arbor is a neat government. We have great people in the city, Republicans, Democrats, independent. It's the most eclectic. And if you're a mayor of the city for 4 terms like I was, and you get to see all of it, and you get to hear all of it. I had 80 80 gay people come down to my condo. You know, 7 o'clock in the morning. I had enough coffee and cocoa and orange juice, and we chatted for an hour. And we left. And I kind of knew exactly what they wanted. I mean, I'm not a Republican. I'm only really a Republican in some areas. I cut taxes 3 times. Well, so what? But what I object to very, very much is that the allegiance of our elected officials are going to the party before it goes to the people that they serve. That's my feeling. It's so strong right now in my 75th year on this earth, and I shall do everything I can to get more involvement by good citizens in our government. And if that means we go to a nonpartisan so people just don't put party labels on people, I'm tired of party labels. I did probably more, and a lot of Republicans have done a lot for this city over the years and years and years. I'd like to see us just drop it all, elect the best people we can possibly elect. Let them talk. Let them go to the issues. But I don't want to be tied to Newt Gingrich and those guys. I mean, that's not fair, is it? No. I mean, you got some people you wouldn't want to be tied to, kid. All I'm saying is I'm all for, if you want, I thought this over when you asked me to come up here. I have strong opinions. I've thought about this and thought about it. I know exactly all my stance on all these things. It's nonpartisan. It's every odd year election. It's in November. And we get as many people as we can out to vote. And we get the best people we can to vote to run. And I don't care if they're Republicans, Democrats, whatever. Let's hear what they have to say. What's your priorities? What are your priorities? What will you do? There's so many issues in this city that you can talk about. Rail service, absolutely important. Transportation, absolutely important. You know, because I'm a Republican doesn't mean I'm an environmentalist, too. Did you know that? I trout fish. I belong to the conservation clubs. I help plant trees. All this stuff. Me, a Republican. And yet, if you go to the poll and you don't know me, yeah, I'm a Republican. There's Newt Gingrich coming over the corner. Da-da-da. George Bush is right. Oh, shit, right there. Okay. You know my feelings. I'm so locked into this thing, it's unbelievable. That's what old people have a chance to do, is become opinionated as hell at 75. I passed the gavel.
Well, the next question, why don't we start with you, Dave? There's a high cost associated with running for office in terms of both time and money. And the 2014 election was the most expensive Ann Arbor City election. What impacts does this have, or do these factors have, on the candidates who run for city offices?
Let me begin by saying I appreciate the fact that Lou has now opened the door to cursing.
Well, that's what a mayor does. I mean, you learned that pretty early. I entertained Bo Schembecker so many times on those recruiting trips. And you didn't know that was part of the mayor's job in Ann Arbor. You automatically get whether you like it or not. And that's to entertain parents sometimes for high-value recruits coming in to make sure they understand the city's safe.
Just make sure they understand that the city
is safe.
Is safe. Okay. All right. I just didn't hear you. Okay. So the question was the impact of expensive elections on candidates. Gosh, I don't know. But I think that the price tag on some of these campaigns recently, and the mayoral election, I think, sort of skewed things way higher than what they had been historically. I mean, if you just look at the council races, I think it was probably 2008, there was a sort of a dramatic jump in the amount of money that was being raised for council races. And that's stayed, I think, in the same ballpark for the last 7 or 8 years. It was the mayoral election that I think sort of, we knew that that people were going to raise a lot of money. We didn't realize, or at least I didn't expect it to be quite that much. I think that the downside for, or the negative impact of that on Ann Arbor governance is not some general abstract, oh, money in politics is bad, but rather when that much money is invested in getting that job, it contributes to the perception that that job is one that requires really special expertise, that it is a full-time occupation, and that consequently it should be compensated as a full-time professional occupation. So to me, that's a negative, because it sort of fits into this general momentum towards relatively high levels of compensation for elected officials here locally, and it contributes to the common understanding that, oh, yes, well, you know, the job of mayor, that's a full-time job. Job of council member, that's a full-time job. And that, as a consequence, contributes unnecessarily to barriers to people willing to serve. So I have no doubt that a lot of council members spend at least the equivalent of a full-time job at that activity, but I would say that that's not really a required part of the job. That's sort of what I would consider to be the ongoing campaign to retain the job. And I think that to the extent that we could reduce compensation, we might see reduced amounts of money invested in the campaigns, and we might, as a consequence, see a greater pool of people willing to step forward to serve, because their perception is that, oh, yes, that is an accessible position. You don't need special credentials to do it. It does not require a full-time commitment.
Jean?
It is expensive to run an election if it's the first time you are running. It's buying yard signs. It's buying literature to hand out. It's buying social media expertise. And it takes you a tremendous amount of time. There is no doubt that you're going to be spending every evening and most of your weekends for 3 or 4 months going door to door so that you can introduce yourself to the people in your ward. That's a very heavy commitment. If you're doing it for the first time, you're probably going to do several mailings, so that's going to up the cost the first time. You can probably run for council for $6,000 or $7,000, but it means you have to ask your friends and your family and people that you know support your point of view for money, and for a lot of people, that's not comfortable. I think when people understand the amount of time it takes to get yourself elected, it's not just the money, it's a tremendous time and energy commitment that scares off people. If you don't have a ready cache of friends who have the money to help you with the necessary expenses, then that's going to probably scare you away from doing it. It's also important that people who run for council have a good idea of how much time it takes once you're on council, because you're not just going to meetings twice a month. You're going to meetings with staff people. You're going to meetings with constituents. You're going to be on various commissions that the city has as a liaison with the city council. So it can be 20 to 30 hours a week. If you want to do the job to the best of your ability, using all the expertise there is on staff and all the expertise there is in the community. Otherwise, you're somebody who's not going to have the best base of knowledge, and you're going to be going to meetings but not fully able to participate because you haven't gotten the background on the issues that's there for you to get through various sources. So those are realities. I don't think the salary that council members get paid of something like $3 an hour for the time you put in is any reason for being a council member. To reduce the salary also doesn't make it more attractive to be a council member. You give what you can while you're doing the job based on your own sense of what you need to do in order to be well-informed and what you need to get to do to get the best amount of information out of the community so you can make good decisions. So I don't think that relates to money, but it does relate to time and energy. Being a council member is not for the faint of heart. You have to be thick-skinned, willing to listen to all kinds of points of view. You have to be willing to put the hours in that it takes to find out what the community is thinking. If you are running in the city at large, of course, you have lots of folks to try to contact, and that will be an expensive proposition. And it will definitely deter people from running if they cannot come up with the necessary resources to run a good campaign. I can't think of anything worse than doing all the work of going door to door and not having enough literature to give somebody so they can read it after you've been there and find out what it is you stand for. To do the job in a half-hearted way means you probably will not be successful. So there's no doubt that the cost of an election is a deterrent to some people participating. I don't think the salaries have much relationship to that. However, I would put in a plug for party organization because it does help you figure out how to diminish some of the costs or how to maximize your time and your energy by running coordinated campaigns and by getting large orders for yard signs because you're doing it with several people. So it does, in fact, give you some cost savings and make it possible for people to run who might have scarce resources. I don't know of a good way around those costs until we come up with a community that all plugs into exactly the same information and gets the story that they need on people who are running. It's going to be feet on the ground, and it's going to be literature in your hands or literature through the mail or something you get over your social media. And all of that is going to cost some money.
Lou?
What was the subject?
We were talking about the expense of... Okay.
Yeah, it is expensive. There's no question about it. But it's in relative terms, too. It's amazing how many people in this city live in this city who are very interested in the government and how it's run. That goes for the school board and the county board, but the city council probably is, because it usually gets the most publicity. I know that I was a city council member for two terms, and I would say it cost about $5,000 then. Mm-hmm. But I always felt I never really got a lot of money from. I got money, some money from friends, of course, but mostly I got a lot of little dollars from people who did know what you stood for, what you were after, and it was. But raising the money also made people aware of your stands. They want to know what you're going to do, and it does take time. Yeah, but that's why I've up to the point where I left city council. Most of the terms were 2 years and out, and no one was usually. Some were, but not many. I can count on my hand over the 12 years I spent in city government the number of people that went from city council on up to a higher office. Most of them put their 2 years in as a civic responsibility and then left it up to somebody else to take over. I'll give you a little bit of taste of what I would indoctrinate our city councils as mayor. Your job as a city council member is to look after the long-term interests of this city. You set the policy. You set the plans. You have a very professional staff, and they're going to carry out the whole order of the city council. You are the people who make the decisions. The staff will carry it out. Do not micromanage the staff. They are professionals. Question them. Talk with them. Learn from them. If you have a problem with staff, you come back to the city administrator. You do not break the chain of command. It's the city administrator, under our city charter, is the administrative officer of this city. The mayor, and I always get a chuckle, I always say Ann Arbor has a weak mayor. Ann Arbor has one of the strongest mayor systems of anybody, because you have a vote on city council and you have the power of veto. And I have a line veto. And it takes 8 votes to override my veto, and there are only 10 of them. I mean, good Lord, they almost have to come with sabers and guns, which is possible also sometimes. And so the role of a city council person to me is to look after the long-term planning and policy of the city. Let the staff take care of the staff. Now, if you want to go micromanage the staff, first of all, don't break the chain of command, but it's going to take you forever. If you have to go around to all the departments and sit down with staff and help them do their work, and, you know, we had one time we had a reprimand of one council, a person who was trying to change planning reports as they came out of a typewriter. You know, that thing with keys that doesn't connect to anything. Well, that's what, and you know, you just don't do that. Staff can't stand that. It does take time. You have to campaign. You have to put time into it. There's over the century and a half since, you know, the city was incorporated in 1824. There have been a lot of Ann Arborites that served the city well for little or no pay, and they did it as a civic responsibility. And that's what I'd love to see us get back to that. I know it's almost impossible. We've hardened ourselves into the position of too many party labels, too many labels, too many everything. And we're not worrying about what we really need to worry about, and that is to make sure you get a police car there in 2 minutes and a fire truck there in 4 minutes and the garbage picked up. That's a big issue, garbage pickup, within an hour. And when I first came on council, the garbage people had to go inside your garage, pick up the cans, bring them out to the, and dump them, take them back to your garage, and set them down. And now they'd have to put a plastic bag in for you, right? And you'd have to have them there. We went to curbside pickup, you know, and when you stop leaf pickup or curbside pickups or anything else, I'll tell you, they get upset, don't they? Yeah, they do. Okay. So, that's in the best interest of the city. We went to recycle pickup on Ann Arbor was one of the first that picked up recyclables at the curb. They bid on that. They wanted that. I mean, you know. So I think part of being a council member is to know what the hell your constituents want, to feel what the city needs. And you get a pretty good feeling. I mean, you know, if they call you an SOB and you go out the street, you know that something is not ringing true. But I'll tell you what, I love to watch the letters in the Ann Arbor news. I mean, any smart politician in the city, all you have to do is go and just take a little sample. You don't have to go. Anyway, I think I'd like to go back to what David was saying, a more local government.
I would like to go back to the days when the garbage men would actually go get the can and you didn't remember. That sounds fantastic.
Well, it's 5 after 8. I'm just wondering if we want to open it up.
Okay. All right. I'm just looking at the remaining questions we had here and seeing if there's any, like, really stellar ones that we wanted to make sure we... tell you what. Why don't I mention the other questions that we were going to cover going around, and then we'll open it up to the audience. The other questions that we didn't ask yet were the advantages and disadvantages of ward-based city council representation and whether it made sense to consider at-large representation. And the other question, the other topic was whether there a different sort of length of term might yield any sort of advantages, 4 years instead of 2 years, or with still alternating terms. So those were the other questions we were going to raise. But let's open it up now to questions from the audience.
And if you have a question, just come to the mic right here.
Oh, yeah, and please let's keep the questions brief.
And the answers brief?
Yes.
And the answers brief.
Hi, Peter Honeyman. Is this on? Mm-hmm. Yes. The city charter requires pie-shaped wards, which I gather, I mean, this is even before your time, Mr. Belcher. I think this was the 1956 charter revision. I gather that is intended to require that each ward has, as its part of its core constituency, a part of the downtown, so that downtown isn't isolated from the neighborhoods. What do you think of this system now?
Who wants to start?
Jean, you're closer than most of us.
Yes. It also was an attempt to give us pretty standard makeups in our wards. You would have parts of the downtown, but you would also have the students who are in the closest precincts to the downtown. And then you get out into neighborhoods as you go farther out. So it's never an easy way to decide how to divide a geographic area equally. So they were trying to get equal number of voters, sort of equal types of voters as you in each ward. I think it works fairly well because we each have to deal with the same kind of constituents pretty much. We each have to be concerned about students, small businesses, small neighborhoods, wealthy neighborhoods, modest income, high income families. Some wards have more of one than of the other, but it seems to me it works pretty well.
The ward system itself,
mm-hmm.
I think is a good system. I think that at large systems, you know, I watch other cities. I just watched Detroit go from an at-large general election to a ward system. I think it gives the people in that ward a voice that you wouldn't have if you were one of 11 at large. It also ensures that your people in this particular area have a chance at electing someone to represent them, as opposed to maybe one group that can control a whole city on a general election. So I think the ward system is excellent. I can tell you that when I was a city council member, if someone in my ward had a problem, they would call out a council member. And so the council member's right on the front lines, and they feel a kinship to the council person because they elected them, and it's just for their ward, and so they think they have more of a voice, I think, than a general shout in the population of a large city. So I'm all for the ward system. I'm also for representation from as many different people as we can get on all these boards and commissions, because I think it's vital in a city to have all kinds of views from a lot of different people.
Dave, do you want to take a crack at it?
Yeah, sure. I think it's worth distinguishing between a ward-based system in general and a ward-based system where the wards are mandated to be pie-shaped. So I think that, Lou, I think, articulated some really decent arguments for a ward-based system in general. But the way that Jean has described the impact of pie-shaped wards on what that means demographically, I think is accurate. I think the way she described it is fairly accurate, that each ward is a reflection in some sense of the whole city. So you have a bit of the downtown, you have a bit of the sort of medium sort of between downtown and the outer sort of suburban area of the city. So you get a mix of the, in your ward you get a mix of the city that's sort of representative. But to me, I would say, well, is that really the goal? Are we taking advantage of the full power of a ward-based system, which would presumably be, I would say, to ensure that significant minority populations have a chance to elect one of their own. So you want to make sure that you're not diluting the potential elective power of a particular demographic group. So whether that's African Americans, whether that's Asian Americans, whether that's young people. So to me, I would say it's the number one priority in Ann Arbor politics, but if we're going to debate the question of should we have pie-shaped wards as opposed to some other shaped wards, I think that that I would be in favor of exploring various different shapes besides pie.
The world of pie.
More of a sheet cake kind of a book.
Sure.
Are there other questions?
Yeah, well, I wanted to correct something that Dave said. Charter changes are, the number of signatures required is 5% of the registered voters, and Ann Arbor ordinance changes are for 20% of the number of people who voted in the mayor. And I only know that because I contributed to the mayor total and now feel like I've contributed to being an impediment to citizen bottom-up democracy, but that's for another time. In the course of campaigning for mayor, I toyed with the idea of sortition, that is, random appointment, either to, I guess I'm thinking, to boards or commissions or even for city council, and imagined in a 10-person council, maybe five people, one person from each ward being elected and the other being appointed. And I'm I'm wondering, I guess I would just look for your comments on that kind of thing. Council maybe being too important, but for boards and commissions, would this improve the quality or the I don't know, the excitement level of civic participation?
Brian, could you say again what the proposal was?
Oh, well, this just sortition, the idea of sortition in general, random appointment to boards or commissions and or council. If you're looking at a 10-person council and have five wards, two people from each ward, one of those representatives being elected and the other being appointed. Is there any? Do any of you have anything nice to say about that idea?
Right.
I think the system we have right now is very adequate. I guess that's all I can say. I've never had a problem. We have a lot of citizens who volunteer, and you know, and then there's a lot of expertise in Ann Arbor. You know, the trick is to hire someone, but don't pay them. And you put them on a board where their expertise is, they would charge $400 an hour out there, and now they're a volunteer. And I think those, you need one or two on each board of those. But other than that, I think citizens will tell you where they want to go, and I think it's up to the city council people to recommend to the mayor their constituency. They're closer to the constituency the mayor is. And the mayor appoints and the council confirms. So I always look for the council people to come to me and say, we got some people over here who would like to serve on this commission and this commission. We never had a scarcity of good volunteers. I think our commissions have done very well over the years. And there's a law I should pass on that's unwritten. A mayor never replaces a commission member appointed by another mayor until their term is up, and that guarantees some consistency through the government of both parties, or in the case of this, no parties. But if it went to a nonpartisan election, it would be the same, where the outgoing mayor makes the appointments. And you just don't touch them until their term's up.
Jean, or
that's a law I'm not familiar with.
It's passed from mayor to mayor in a coffee.
I see.
We haven't needed to apply it for quite a while.
Or the issue has not come up, or no one's complained.
No, we have new mayors. Well, that's right, 14 years. Talks to himself.
Brian, the challenge with appointment is who's going to appoint? Does the whole council appoint? Does the mayor appoint? You're taking accountability even farther away from the people that are being represented. So I think having the people in a ward elect the person who's going to represent them is probably the greatest accountability you could hope for. And I can't imagine the kind of battle that would ensue to determine who is going to do the appointing.
Well, I mean, random appointment as overcoming some of the impediments vis-a-vis money. The amount of money that needs to be raised in an election is just as a way to start that.
Can I just come up then? Because, wait a second here. We need to be able to hear it because it's kind of a long discussion.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I only float the idea as because appointment is a way to skirt the amount of money that needs to be raised in the campaign issue that was discussed earlier.
So when you say random appointment, you're suggesting that we take the voter rolls and run a lot.
Again, not necessarily for council, Dave, but for boards and
but
for boards and commissions and things like that as kind of an expansion of the jury duty model. Since everyone loves serving on jury duty.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably a good comparison, and I think that to the extent we want to think about this for more than 5 seconds, I would say that I would envision that would become viewed as a kind of punishment.
And I would say that I second that too.
Spoken as someone who's sat through a lot of different commission meetings.
And citizens have their, they have their desires. I mean, this is what I'm interested in. I'm a chicken farmer. Okay, well, he wants to be on the committee that controls chickens.
Do we have any other questions from the audience?
Yeah, I must have not opened my door to Jean because I didn't meet her until she came by in the summer. So my question is, the last few elections that have been in our ward, or a few of them, and in some of the other wards, is you go to a primary, there's 2-3 people, one of them gets elected or doesn't get elected, but there is no opposing party. So whoever wins the primary is going to basically win the election.
True.
And so you get very little representation in November, or voter participation in November, because it's basically decided in August. And what do we do about that?
Dave, do you want to start?
When you said our ward, you mean Ward 3?
Since Jean came to my house, yes, Ward 3, but
right.
There are other wards that this has been the case also.
Right, but I mean, Ward 3, just off the top of my head, in the last decade has had a fair number of three-way primary races where the primary has been not just contested but extra special contested with three candidates, but then the November election is not contested at all.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's a more extreme contrast than you find in maybe other wards. A nonpartisan approach really of any flavor, I think, would address that. So if you run a nonpartisan primary and say the top two advance, or if you just say, well, no, it's, as many candidates appear on the ballot in November as submit valid qualifying petitions, nonpartisan basis, then with no primary at all, I think a nonpartisan solution solves that problem.
Any other comments on that?
Well, I think if you look at our history, the August primary is just, it's so feeble because the students aren't here for one thing, most of them, and a lot of people are on vacation, and a lot of people have other interests, and I just don't think that's a good way to do it. We need to change at least that part of it if we don't do anything else, because you're having less than 1,000 people elect somebody who's going to serve you for 2 years, or a mayor that's going to serve you for 2 years also. So I think we really have to do something. And I agree, the partisan, nonpartisan ballot. And Gene has a great point. Most people know your leanings. Come on. I mean, but that still frees people up from the yoke of having to vote because I'm a Democrat for a Democrat or a Republican for a Republican. At least it gives them some freedom. Take Jane Lum there. Jane garners a lot of votes from a lot of people, and she's not a Democrat. So, I mean, that's a prime example right now of what can happen if you have a bunch of independents running. Independents. Now, some of them are going to be Republicans, some are going to be Democrats. But I think that would free up, and I think David made that point earlier, I think it would free up the election that more people, good people, that would like to run would get into the race. We do it for school boards. And so far, I don't see party labels attached to them. Now, I think this is different. This is blood sport. I mean, this city council and that government, because it controls money. And any, well, sort of school board, but, you know, city council controls a lot of money and it controls a lot of jobs and controls a lot of contracts. But I've watched cities that are strictly under one party, and it becomes the party's closed caucus of choosing candidates that become the choice that's forced down the voters' throats in a closed session. And that, to me, is not democracy. I think democracy is an open, wide open, free-for-all, that people can debate the issues and that people will vote for them based on the issues without the protection of that shield of a party and without the pressure of a party. Because I think a closed meeting of any party to choose the Democratic election in that particular caucus is wrong. It's just wrong. And then you've weakened it by going to a primary, too.
I assume you're describing the Republican caucus, because that is not what happens in the Democratic Party.
I have no idea what happens in the
party here. Anybody who wants to run for office puts their hat in the ring, gets the 100 signatures, and they're on the ballot. There is no winnowing out by the party of people to run.
How many people in Ann Arbor of 120,000 people know that?
Well, if you're a Democrat, you know.
Well, okay, yeah.
You know that.
We got three.
Because what we've watched happen, because the Republican Party is not fielding candidates anymore, is that Democrats are looking around and saying, well, I can run for that office. I have to do it in August, unfortunately. And I think that's worth discussing. When is an appropriate time to hold a primary to... That's the process of winnowing out people that have large followings and people who don't have not so large followings. I don't know that I've ever heard of an election process where everybody is up in November and there is no winnowing out. I don't think that having it be nonpartisan encourages other people to run that wouldn't run anyway. You have to be strong of heart to do it. And it's money, and it's time, and it's commitment. And that relates usually to your party identification, or if you're an extremely strong independent, even if you're an independent, you have a sense of, I normally vote for this party or for that party. It's a very rare person who says, I am totally open-minded on the subject of who to vote for or what issue to vote for. We all have leanings, so I favor continuing the party system. If we need to find a different way to do primaries so that we can get a better turnout, I'd be very much in favor of that. I'd also be in favor of the Republican Party fielding candidates, or any party that wants to field candidates, get them out, state their position. I do not think we in Ann Arbor are so drawn to what the national description of a Democrat or a Republican is that we can't consider the person and what they stand for. I think that rigidity at the upper levels is not so prominent here. But I do think the other folks who have different points of view have to get out there and have to state what it is and attract people to support them.
Well, one example that I can just name you right now, I didn't see one credible candidate, except maybe Miss Lum, go head-to-head with Hifty in 14 years. Not one. God bless you for running and everything else, but I'm talking about somebody who has legs in the local election process. I didn't see one. And that, to me, is because I remember back then, it was a fight. I mean, I had to go against Jack Garris, a Democrat, come over the Republicans because he couldn't win a Democrat because the Democrats were in power. Well, I mean, I don't know how God. And so I think that basically we should We should come up with a way that people feel comfortable in running. If you're not part of the Democrat in party, you're just as much as an outsider as a Republican in a general election. If you don't feel comfortable going against the Hifty because he's got the party apparatus behind him, and you say, oh my God, you got the party apparatus, how am I going to face that? I mean, that's the same thing you're saying, that I think that intimidates people.
Well, I think that is our time. We've reached our conclusion. So I want to thank our panelists for participating in this discussion this evening, and thank all of you for coming and for the questions from the audience.